This is John Miller, and you're listening to Superhero Speak, the official podcast of Outpouring Comics.
When creative forces collide, they do great things. Head Shrinkers Press believes in the fusion of creative forces, the typed electrons and ballpoint scrawls that fuel our writing, every stylus that glides across glass, every pen trailing ribbons of India ink, the explosion of colors splashed freshly on finished pages. When those forces come together, they make great comics. They make Head Shrinkers Press comics. Every day, we wake up with only one thing in mind, to bring you the absolute best titles our team can create. From the outermost reaches of the galaxy to the Badlands of the West, inside every Head Shrinkers title, you're sure to be going on an adventure you won't soon forget. Let us show you what happens when creative forces collide. Visit us right now at www.headshrinkerspress.com or come chat with us on our Facebook page. Head Shrinkers Press, where creative forces collide.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Very long time. Yes.
Oh, the memories.
Yes. There was a what was next to it? It was Sam Goody for a long time.
Yeah, Sam Goody's, and then that got sold to something else. And oh, we're doing this in the wrong voice. Yeah, I remember it was Sam Goody's. They used to show these disc-like things called records. Oh, and then there were these little plastic things. They used to call them cassettes. And that was the method we used to hear things through. Yeah, Sam Goody's. I remember it well.
Yes. I like perms.
John, I told you, no more prunes for you.
Oh, damn it.
It's a little early in the broadcast for that. You got to wait till at least the midway point because you know when they hit hard.
They do. All right. Well, I don't want to cut that out. So,
please don't cut anything out. No one ever said this needed to be on topic or even to have a topic.
No, that is true. Wow. Well, for those who haven't figured it out yet, you're listening to Superhero Speak. And I'm your host, Dave.
And Ben.
And John.
And we have a special guest with us this week who remembers the good old days like we do.
Back
and
in the time.
Call them special to their face.
And I am sure I'm going to pronounce your name wrong.
It's Line Puppet, don't you see? I mean, it's right on the screen. Oh, that's not right.
It is Bruce Natchson.
Oh, you were so close, but that was like really good. It's Naxon.
Naxon. Oh, okay. So the H is a K.
Pretty H much. It's like Jackson with an N.
Ah. So if those who haven't guessed, Bruce thinks he's funny. I mean, he's an online comedian, a YouTuber, working on Dark Spectre, which I found thoroughly amusing, and that's why he's on the show.
I'm glad somebody found it amusing, aside from my mother, who finds everything I do amusing.
Well, that's a mother's job, I think.
I think generally. So. I mean, that way she doesn't feel despair over the waste of her life.
That's not actually your mother, right? In the
No. No, but she's channeling my mother. That's the important bit of it.
Okay. I was going to say, did she use her maiden name so she didn't have any attachment to you because of this? Or
Oh, Judy has attachment to me. I'm like her son on screen. Otherwise, otherwise she ignores me. No, she loves me. I love her. She's like my second mom, legally. So, I don't know. Where do we start?
So I guess we'll start with, you know, a little bit with Dark Spectre. Where did the idea come from?
Well, the idea came out of a blind panic to have to write a sketch for a sketch comedy group. I love superheroes. I've always loved superheroes. And it's always, you know, it's always been the same crap. It's always the hero's story, the hero's journey, his struggles, his this, blah, 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 blah.
you know, I'm the hero's not really the most interesting character usually. Mm. Though actually, if you watch Marvel movies, they tend to ruin their villains all the time, aside from Loki. But but like, what makes a villain tick? And honestly, to be honest with you, I'd rather steal from you than help you. So it was natural for me to take that villain point of view. And so I wrote this sketch. What happens if a real hero and a real villain? Because a lot of the comedy tends to, when you watch YouTube comedies or people do superhero spoofs, the heroes are always losers and the villains have these weird powers. They're never what they are, which is superpowered individuals that could potentially raise an entire city block without thinking about it.
Yeah.
I wanted to do a comedy about those people, but not take it from, oh, they're losers or they've got like some dumbass power that like, it's Snot Boy. He can create webs out of his nose by golfer sneezing and trap somebody.
Watch out when he has a cold.
Yes. Just picture him swinging through the city a la Spider-Man just by his nose with like a thread.
Oh,
building the
building. That's an image.
There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And anybody who wants to write that, feel free. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to have a real superhero and a real supervillain and have the humor come more from what their lives are. And so I wrote that and I presented it at a place called The Mohos, which is Fred Willard's sketch comedy group. That's where I met Judy, who played the mother. And in fact, when we put it up on stage, she was the mother in the sketch. Now, I wasn't in the sketch because I wanted to watch it and be able to see what my words were doing, which is pretentious, but that's the writing process. Writing process is just pretension on top of pretension. After it was done, I was pretty happy with myself. And so, I made the first Dark Spectre short, which as one of you gentlemen said was amusing. Thank you. I've been going to film festivals. This Saturday, we're showing at the Pasadena International Film Festival. I'm not location dropping at all. 7:15, the Lomley Theater, Playhouse 7. You can meet me because I'll be the guy there desperately hoping all of you laugh, and you should.
Don't worry. We definitely won't have that underneath the, you know, this post on our
in
site.
The show notes.
Yeah, yeah. We won't do that.
I appreciate that deeply, guys. So, and that's where it came out of. I spent, I rounded up a wonderful group of people who, to be honest with you, had better things to do than help my ass out. And we created this short that I think, considering the amount of money I didn't have to spend on it, looks, you know, pretty professional.
Yeah. So I have to ask this, based on your point of view and correct me if I'm wrong. You're a big fan of the 89, Batman, Tim Burton Batman.
Who isn't? Of course.
I mean, because one of the things that a lot of people say about that movie is that it's not about Batman so much as it is about the Joker's journey of becoming the Joker and whatnot. So, and it's what makes it an interesting movie. So
they definitely presented, well, actually, both Nolan as well as Burton presented really compelling Jokers that really defined the entire story they were telling.
Yeah.
Right.
Though, granted, Burton's Joker had a history and a past and essentially a beginning, middle, and end, where Nolan's Joker, you know, was an agent of chaos. His back was murky. His goals were murky. And it just was all about this. I can destroy the city because I can destroy the city. I didn't really think about it as an influence, but I'm sure it was there in the back of my mind.
Right.
As Jack Nicholson does to everybody.
That he does.
Even he in your dreams.
Yeah, he is the devil that dances in the pale moonlight. Inspires us all.
Oh, memories.
And there's no better way to spend a Saturday night than destroying the city. But so you said that you worked with a sketch comedy group. Was comedy something you've always wanted to do?
Comedy was something I fell into just because I was desperately hoping that I could talk to girls, and making them laugh seemed to be a good jumping off point.
Yeah, that's make them laugh, make them breakfast, right? Isn't that the old saying?
That's the old saying. And occasionally it works, though. Sometimes people just stare at you sort of like, what's wrong with you? You seemed normal a moment ago, and now you're laughing
right
at yourself.
Ones.
Yeah, you got to find
the right ones. Exactly.
Hey, if she's not laughing at you or with you, it's probably not going to go anywhere too pleasant.
Yeah. Right.
Never did. But enough about my therapy. So yeah, I don't know, where were we at again? I've distracted myself.
All right, so comedy was a way to pick up chicks.
And also a way of I was very shy. I mean, as a kid, mm-hmm. I was horrifically, horrifically shy. And once I got into being a teenager, at first I fell into music, and then music went away, and it became a way of, if I don't do something of some sort, I'll never talk to anybody. And I guess just being funny grew out of that. Then when I moved out to Los Angeles to do what everybody wants to do, which is be a waiter, it just became the easier skill to pursue. I could be funny. I can write funny stuff. And I also, from a practical standpoint, when I'm trying to write things that are funny, I'm not trying to make people who are improvisers or comedians laugh. I'm trying to see what's funny from an audience point of view, if that makes any sense.
Right.
No, yeah, definitely.
Because I don't know if you watch a lot of or been involved with any kind of improvising or sketch comedy, a lot of the comedy tends to play to the in crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So
the audience at hand.
Yeah. Or basically, if you go to an improv show, it's full of improvisers and all the comedy is meant for them. A lot of that comedy wouldn't really translate to the average person, which you can tell by watching who's the boyfriends or girlfriends who've been pulled to the show and how abjectly miserable they are. I see you've had that experience.
Not so much with comedy, but I've been in quite a few bands, so yes.
It's the same kind of look of, I love this person, so I'm here. I'm here. I'm yep. desperately here. They better buy me dinner afterwards, god damn it, because I'm just please don't ask me how it went. Just don't ask me. Oh, you're asking. Great. It was interesting. I never considered it from that point of view. It gave me something to think about, which is the polite way of saying, god, you suck.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. So yeah, the Mohos is one of the groups I'm involved with, which was a shock, because they're all comedy professionals, they're all brilliant, and I don't know what I'm doing there. I think of myself as like the junior Woodchuck member. I'm like, hey, I write funny for you. Okay. Please don't realize I'm here, kick me out. Okay.
It's between coffee runs, right?
Yes. Coffee runs and nodding politely.
Ah, well, good. That's important.
And how much did you do while you were there?
Wrote sketches, performed them. I mean, I'm still there. I've been on a little bit of a break simply because being in production for Dark Spectre 2 has been taking up a lot of my time, because it's going to be much bigger than the original one was, and now includes things that I've never had to think about before, such as insurance and permits, porta potties, tables don't magically appear. Neither do washing stations, and they really need to be there. It's important that you have a washing station there for all day, because people are animals, and if it's not there, they're just going to wipe their hands on their trousers, and it's just going to be awful.
That they are. So you say this is going to be bigger. And
yes.
I have watched the first one via your website, which I thought was hilarious. When you say bigger, is it going to be a longer in running time? Is it going to involve more characters? What kind of details are you able to share with us?
Well, in bigger, I'm not sure that the running time will be that much bigger, that much longer. But in the first one, there's a lot of effects. There's no actual fight. This time around, there's going to be a fight, a real fight. Okay. We have a stunt team. We're shooting in an outdoor location. So there was a street permit. For a while, it looked like we're going to have to close the street. But thankfully, we changed locations a little bit because of our original location was this beautiful street with all these beautiful buildings. And we put in a permit for that. But as it turns out, a very nice business looking building turned out to be a state penitentiary.
Mm.
And they don't like to close down streets near state penitentiaries because it hampers their means of quote unquote doing business. So that became a little bit of a no-no. So now we're in a different street with a different building that has this nice promenade. So we don't have to be in the actual street. We can still be outdoors and, you know, look like we're in the street without literally being in a street and blocking off roads.
Nice.
So we've got this nice large outdoor location. We're going to have like a crew of at least 20 to 22 people. We're going to have a cast of like 25 people, including like principals and extras. So it's much larger than the three people of the original shoot. There's three different shoot days with on different locations for different parts of it. I don't know. Did you, if you checked out the Kickstarter, there was like a, update I did on Monday. And on Monday, there's like this little news report. That's part of one of the shoots that we also did like a little promo out of. So there's oh, nice. That. And then there's going, so there's the cast did go up, like the principal cast went up to about 8 people. There's 25 extras. There's a crew of 20 something people. There's going to be 3 shoot days, one of which we've already completed. It's just much larger. And there's a stunt team. There's going to be more visual effects. It's just incredibly larger. And I'm trying to tell. What I originally shot was a comedy sketch that hinted at bigger things.
Right.
Now I want to really explore those bigger things.
Do you have more? No problem. Do you have more ideas in this? I mean, it sounds like this isn't going to be the end of it.
More in your head. I have a lot more. I'm still figuring all the implications of it out. What I originally wrote was comedy skit about supervillain, superhero fight gets interrupted by real life family member. And there wasn't that much deeper into it. But when I sat down to ask the big question, which is, okay, here's this villain and his mom's there. Why is his mom there? So you have one of two reasons. You've got the sketch comedy reason. Oh, he's a loser. Oh, he doesn't know how to drive. Oh my God. He needs his mom because without his mom, he's like Linus and she's his blanket. And that's fine for sketch comedy. That's cool. It's funny. It's Saturday Night Live. But if it's not a sketch and there's a real reason for her to be there, the answer I came to is because she couldn't be anywhere else. He needs to keep track of her. And if he needs to keep track of her, there has to be a reason. That leads you to a supervillain who is bound by family obligations, somebody who has to take care of this person he loves. You know, he's a villain, but he loves his mom. And from there, that just opens up to this much larger world to what kind of life could this character lead? Like, what is he swallowing if he can only go out and do the things he wants to do every so often? What is his normal day like if he needs to protect her? And that's just been leading me to all these different places. And what I'm hoping to do with this short on The Dark Spectre 2 is I'm hoping to use it as the jumping off point to create a series pitch for it. Nice. And then try to get. Right now I'm doing a Kickstarter to try to, you know, offset the massive amount of money this second one's going to cost me. But beyond that, I then want to use this to try to get actual funding to create a real series.
See, and I thought the big question was, is the Dark Spectre ever going to find Drew Love with the spark?
That's a question. You know, he has pretty eyes. He does. And such nice abs under that vinyl.
I'm sure his nemesis.
You were noticing.
There's a good question though, because you mentioned the vinyl. Who designed and created the costumes? The
costumes were designed by a dude named Brandon Jackson. Very young dude, decent job. He was a little inexperienced, but you know. He pulled it together. They're being redesigned by another costume artist named Jesse Pridemore, who is more of a professional costume designer, so that they're a little more durable because they've got to survive a fight now.
Right.
Okay. But I hope that answered the question.
Oh yeah, yeah. No. Just, you know, I mean, because that's something like, you know, cosplayers put a lot of time and energy into designing costumes and you know, I know it's not an easy task. You know, when you're doing something for basically no money, you know, I was just kind of curious.
Yeah, most of the materials came out of Joanne's fabric.
Ah, oh, there you go. Right.
Oh, it's a very good place.
So,
things you can do there.
So, obviously, the whole idea grew out of the love of superheroes. So who, you know, did you read comic books as a kid?
I read comic books as a kid. I was a very big Marvel person. I didn't get into DC until a bit later on. And I more got into DC through their, well, obviously, you know, with the Batman stuff through Killing Joke and mm-hmm. Dark Knight Returns in year one. But they're the cartoons I found versus the Marvel cartoons were just so much more impressive. Batman, the animated series, which of course was just an extension of Burton's Batman. But the stories they told were still nicely dark. And then as it continued into like Batman Beyond, which was amazingly dark for something that they literally pitched as he's Batman, but for kids.
Yes.
And Batman for Kids has his like, is a angsty punk who gets his father murdered in the first episode and, you know, has an embittered, like old Bruce Wayne who has everyone in his life abandon him just for kids.
And that's not heavy content at all.
No, not at all. And then there was like the New Adventures of Superman, which was probably one of the better more relatable interpretations of Superman that was ever, you know, that I ever saw, how they did the person behind them. So I was a big fan of those. But as a kid, it was all Marvel. And my favorite hero, I think I was a very patriotic kid because I was Captain America. I was a big Avenger fan. It was like, I was a sort of like doofy little kid who always played the paladin in role-playing games. I'm lawful good. God, I want to strangle that little bastard.
Well, just remember the famous saying from The Dark Knight: "Lawful good doesn't mean lawful nice."
That's true.
That's true. That's very true. That just means you've got a very big stick up your ass about doing it just the right way. But yeah, So I read those. I was another one of my favorites from back then, and in fact I just bought all the annotated hardcovers of these with the Sandman.
Oh, okay.
I really liked Gaiman's writing. And still do, to be perfectly honest.
Yes.
The Sandman, when that came out, that just broke so many molds. It was I remember when it came out, and I have all of them, so it's still some of the best storytelling out there.
It so beautifully blends mythology. And at first they even like paid a little tribute to the superhero stuff, but they left that behind really quickly. It was so just the way they like balanced in mysticism. And there was a lot of research he did too. Gaiman did a ton of research. In the early magazines, those ceremonies he would describe were kind of, you know, things people did to try to do conjurings and whatnot. It was just from top to bottom. It was brilliant. I just actually unwrapped them and began looking through them. I was surprised to find out the annotated versions are all in black and white. Yeah. They don't have the color, which at first is kind of jarring, but after a while you're like, hey, it's still the Sandman.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
I actually can't wait till I have like the 3 weeks open that I can actually sit down and really read them.
I remember, it's funny that you mentioned playing a paladin lawful good, because I played a paladin one time when I was in high school. And the DM I had was a real sticker. Like anything that I kind of went off a little bit to a neutral side, he's like, oh, no, you can't do that, or you lose all your abilities. So, yes, it's hard to play that way, kids. Just remember that.
Better to be chaotic good. Just better. Like, you have a lot more fun. Like, your life is full of rules and regulations. Don't actually take that into your fantasy life.
Right. Chaotic good. A lot like John is. Perfect.
I'm absolutely chaotic neutral. Don't you understand? I can turn when you least expect it.
And yet still like be Deadpool. Very ambivalent about it.
Exactly.
Oh, I loved Deadpool. Like, I'm assuming all three of you guys like camped out and saw Deadpool on the first day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we all opening weekend made a point to get out to see it. And yes, it was great. Despite someone's false aversions here in the show.
John.
I don't know what you're talking about. I really don't.
Oh, that's that neutral part. Okay, I see now.
Yeah. I convinced my girlfriend to go with me to see Deadpool. She hates superhero movies and she loved it.
That could have gone either way for you. It's good that it went that way for you.
As a comedian, when you watched the movie, did you think, finally, a comedy-based superhero movie?
I don't know if I thought finally a comedy-based superhero movie. I thought finally like a good subversive superhero movie that actually makes fun of the tropes. And then also isn't afraid to take that extra step and go that extra mile when it comes to, you know, it earned its R rating. What I'm afraid of and what I hope doesn't happen is that Hollywood has a tendency to see a massive success like this and take the absolute wrong message from it. So, It'll never happen, but you know, you don't want them looking at it and going like, that's it. Superhero movies need to be R-rated. That's the wrong message. The right message is, okay, you don't have to do this, like the what's becoming the formulaic Marvel world building that has so many moving pieces to put into other films that it becomes a mishmash of like incoherency or close to that. Looking at you, Avengers 2. But, you know, but, you know, interesting stories, you know, like it doesn't need to be R. It's okay if it is. It's okay if it's not. It has to be interesting. It has to be good. Don't be afraid to veer off the beaten path. Like, I think that was the real story of Deadpool.
Right. Stay true to the story.
It'll be interesting to see what they do for Deadpool 2 to 4 to 18. Who knows how many they'll sequel. You know, Ryan Reynolds was born to play that role. He's waited his entire life to play that role.
Yeah.
Because that's really what he wants to be. So I don't think he's going to tire of that. Kind of like Hugh Jackman did Wolverine up until the point that, you know, the Centrum Silver began kicking in and he needed to kind of has to walk away.
Well, I mean, almost.
And it's interesting, too, what you're saying, too, because, I mean, in the past couple of weeks, they've announced that they're going to try to make Wolverine 3, the last Hugh Jackman Wolverine movie, rated R. And then Warner Brothers announced, oh, when the Blu-ray for Batman v Superman comes out, the director's cut is going to be R-rated. So I think they did start taking the wrong message from the movie.
Yeah. Already. Mm-hmm.
And I find that latter one kind of strange because they're basically doing the same thing they had planned on doing. They're just trying to play off of the R-rated hype because they would have released a director's cut.
Right.
And it would have just been listed as unrated. But now, because of the success of Deadpool, they're specifically stamping it as...
Yeah, I think what they're going to do is they're going to add blood. So, okay, this guy dies, but instead of where he died and just went down, now there's going to be like a nice 300 spray of blood up against the wall, and it's going to be... Like his brain's gonna pop out the back of his head. It's like, hey, Superman didn't save him. Aww. He falls down. By the way, like, am I the only person who is not thrilled with Cahill's person? Who just like I don't see Superman in him, and I don't see Clint in him, and they may sell personality. I don't know. Not loser's not the right word, but they've taken what the character was and just drained it of everything. And now it's just another, you know, moody attempt at Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
Am I the only one?
No, I agree. I think he's not our Superman. He is, you know, there's a certain archetype to Superman, and definitely the Henry Cavill depiction is not that guy. It's probably a little bit more akin to the weird, you know, version they have in the comics now that is a bit more brash and dickish. And I think we're seeing some of that, but I think that unless there's a plan to evolve him into the Boy Scout we're used to him being, I don't think it's working. And I think, honestly, if that was their goal to evolve him from this, you know, this bold, you know, not humble version of Superman into the one that we know and love, they should have started younger. Like, they should have started the younger version of him and worked up to that over a couple movies.
Right.
It's not that I need, like, truth, justice in the American way, but especially considering they're trying to build their version of the Avengers with the Justice League, Superman always provided a counterpoint to Batman. It was always a balance thing. So Superman was and is at his core a farm boy from Kansas. He is an alien, but he is more American than just about anybody else. He truly is, you know, mom, apple pie, the American way. That's cynic in Batman. And there was that balance. Now, you know, I'm not opposed to the whole bettering Batman. I'm sure it'll be, you know, he's got the chin for it, and probably, like, it looks like at least several go-rounds of steroids for it. Both those guys. Oh, yeah. That chin has grown a dimple, and it's gotten wider. It's like
I'm well, Batman's chin. Well, it gets its own steroid injections.
But no,
that must work, too.
Right. I mean, if you're going to start off with a darker Superman, how can Batman be a counterpoint unless Batman's a murderer, you know?
And he could well be, because they've already made Superman a murderer.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. No, and if he's going to play a counterpoint to Superman, that basically means that Batman has to be the Boy Scout in this movie, and I don't know if I see that. Like, that's not a Batman that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I don't want to see Batman as the Boy Scout. It's right. Not who he is.
Right.
You know what's really sad about these things is that it's just everybody has only three emotions: grim, grimmer, and grimmest. Well, play that, off like, of it's not fun.
I'm willing to bet that Batman shows more emotion in that commercial, or Bruce Wayne shows more warmth in that commercial for Korean Airlines or whatever the airline or Turkish Airlines than he will in the actual movie.
Hello, everyone. Outpouring Comics is proud to announce Doodle. This new title will feature head sketches of various celebrities, amongst others, in the unique style of Caleb Temple. This 56-page picture book is set to release on March 18th. Take advantage of our pre-order discount at outpouringcomics.storeinfy.com today. And while you're there, check out our other great titles at www.outpouringcomics.com. Thank you!
Oh, man. Yes. And that's another thing with... You're just reminding me, there's all this over saturation for this movie, this overhyping, where, you know, now they have this Turkish Airlines thing, and there was like this featurette that came out where they're talking about, you know, we wanted this movie to be based in the real world, and that's where Turkish Airlines comes in, and it was like, what? Now having a real airline featured in the movie makes the movie feel more real, and it's like, Jack Snyder, shut up. You'd do anything for a buck, you know?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
We wanted it to feel real. That's why McDonald's is the food of choice for Batman. We wanted it to feel really real. That's why Tampax is the freshener of choice for Wonder Woman. She can still ride horses.
Yeah.
Oh God, they're killing my childhood. How can I stick up for DC? How?
That's the question.
It's not DC. It's Warner Brothers. It's like the 18 studios. It's Turkish Airlines.
You know, it's really sad because this is almost like competition for you. They're so bad that it's almost funny. And as soon as it gets to the really funny because it's that bad, it's at that point, it's wrapped around to what you're actually trying to accomplish now.
Oh God, I don't have the budget to compete with that.
Well, that's a thing too, because I mean, that's something we've been talking about on this podcast for the last 2.5 years. They've been talking about this movie for that long and hyping it up for that long. Can it in any way possibly live up to that hype?
God, I don't know because I'm already coming in because of how little I like the Superman they're presenting. I'm not burning with desire to see this thing. I will because it's superheroes, and obviously if I wasn't a fan of superheroes, I wouldn't be, you know. But it hasn't gripped me, and I'm not excited about it. I don't think so. For me, there's not a lot of hype to live up to because I'm already expecting to come out of it going, it was okay. I'm hoping that they surprise me. I'm hoping that they correct some of the problems, but it's Zack Snyder.
Right.
And yeah. Zack Snyder, like, he's the guy who took The Watchmen, which, to be honest with you, couldn't really be made into a normal length film no matter what. There was too much stuff there. It really should have been done like Terry Gilliam wanted to do as a miniseries. But he took The Watchmen, and in the pursuit of images, he stripped it of the humanity that defined it. Because that was what The Watchmen was about. It wasn't about superpowered beings with extraordinary abilities doing things. It was about the one extraordinary, like, superpowered being and how his presence unbalanced everything and the normal people doing the weird things they're doing. But they took that away. Rorschach was superhuman. Night Owl was superhuman. Silk Spectre, superhuman. You watch their fight scenes in the movie and their super ability. If you read it in the comic book, the same fight where Night Owl and Silk Spectre kicked the crap out of the knots, at the end of the fight in the book, they were spent, they were worn, they were panicked, they mm-hmm. were sweating, they were horrified. They sure as hell didn't punch somebody in the fist and their, like, arm bone shot out their elbow.
Right.
So this is, and he took The Watchmen and it was full of that stuff. There's another great moment in The Watchmen in the book where Ozymandias is walking with his personal assistant, this young girl, the secretary. The guy tries to quote-unquote assassinate him, shoots her in the chest, she dies, and then Ozymandias, you know, tries to stop him from swallowing the pill. And you see him contemplating, like, what the senselessness of all this over her dead body. In the movie, what was it? Lee Iacocca and, like, three of his business cohorts. So it totally stripped away the humanity of the moment, because already it's someone who, had he died in front of you in the street in real life, you would have been like, oh, that's good, much less on the movie screen.
Right.
So this is the guy helming it, and he does beautiful images, but he doesn't tell good stories. And ultimately,
go ahead.
I was going to say, ultimately, beautiful images are great and wonderful, but when you're missing a story, you have nothing.
And considering how much was in that comic book, like seeing things in the background that were going on in other panels, and just the sheer amount of like Easter eggs and backstory that was going on behind the story in each of these panels that were drawn, there was so much they could have done on the screen, and they just ignored all that.
Yeah. He had his vision, whatever it was. And it just wasn't the story you would have hoped it would have been. And because of that, it was, to me, painful to watch, because Watchmen was my favorite comic book for a long time. That, and also V for Vendetta, which I thought was a little more successful, but still kind of really off the point of what the story really was. And Watchmen just became, awful. But getting back to it all, we're talking about the same guy doing Superman versus Batman.
Right. Yay, more neck snaps.
Yep.
I mean, the more the better. Go super grim.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the thing is, I think the story there, and it's been told in the previews over and over again, is the mistrust of Batman on Superman. And to me, there's your 2-hour movie, you know, and how is Batman going to defeat Superman and fight him and all this stuff. I throwing in Wonder Woman, throwing in Doomsday, throwing in Lex Luthor, throwing in all these other surprises that are supposed to be in this movie.
Is Aqualad coming in?
Yes.
I know sure Aquaman's going sure to be there, but what about Aqualad?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Impulse and Wonder Girl. They're all there, yes.
Oh, don't forget Wonder Twins. Yes. Oh. Stick them in there.
They'll get their next cartoon snapped in the first 5 minutes.
What'd you say?
Ever see the Cartoon Network promo with the Wonder Twins?
Oh, God.
The one where, you know, they're facing some kind of evil group. It's like, Wonder Twin powers activate. And she goes, form of tiger. And he goes, form of water. And it's like in a bucket. He's like, wait a minute. Like, my power sucks. I could be defeated by a sponge. Not even an evil sponge, just a regular sponge. They cut to like this group of evil people, and then there's like a sponge, and it's like got like this big evil grin on its face.
Pretty much.
Oh, memories.
That sums it up. What was the? And then there was the two kids in the one iteration of Super Friends that didn't have powers, and they had the dog, right?
Oh God! I'm remembering that. That was like Oh damn! I think yeah. That was like when there was
Wendy and Marvin and Wonder Dog.
Wonder Dog.
They're stupefying the show.
I think Wonder Dog needs to be in Dawn of Justice. Just saying.
Well, they were there to humanize it.
Yes. Didn't they steal those characters from that weird cartoon with like the talking dune buggy?
Oh God, I remember that.
Super buggy.
Yeah, weren't Wendy and Marvin stolen directly from there?
Oh my God. And didn't they have like a live action version of that too or something?
They did. Yes, they did.
No way.
Super Buggy, the original. They played the down south in Dixie or whatever. They played that on the horn, and it was a magic horn, and it turned the buggy into Super Buggy.
And had a face and it would talk.
Yep. And live action. Gotta love the 70s, man.
Oh my God.
Electra Woman and who is it? Electra Woman and Dinah Girl. Let's bring them back. Put them. Actually, they are back somewhere on YouTube, if I heard correctly.
Oh God, did you guys ever see the Captain Marvel where Billy was traveling around with some like old guy in a camper in what seemed like Child Molester Central? And they go around.
It was innocent. It was innocent.
It was the 70s. They could get away with it.
They did team up with ISIS that one time.
Oh my god.
Oh god. Perfect recruitment video. Perfect.
Hey, just remember, I'm the one who lived through all of those.
Oh, stop it. You're not that much older than us.
Yeah, but I remember all of those. You don't. I remember the original Monster Squad. Jeez.
You are a Monster Squad. Anyway.
Oh, geez, I'm going to be YouTubing that. Like crazy later.
So besides your love of superheroes and, of course, Dark Spectre, what other kind of projects are you working on?
Well, right now, and by right now, I mean Wednesday night, I'm going to be going into a sound studio to finish up post on another comedy skit I've recorded called Approvo, which is about a dating app all based on marking consent. And it's hard to tell more about it without giving it away. But with any luck, sorry, right now I'm being invaded by my pet. My dog is attacking me.
So really, are we talking dating app Purge or something? Or
dating, mixing the Purge with dating. That'd be a beautiful concept for a movie.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, no, no.
That'll be the fourth one.
The dating Purge is in effect for the next 12 hours. You don't need to say yes to anything.
Every swipe is left.
Every swipe is left. No, it's the premise of it is this guy and this girl go out on a date. It's successful. And then as things are moving forward, he pulls out an app to keep track of it. And it just goes from there.
Okay. Dating in the 21st century. All right.
Yep. That's the idea. And that hopefully we will get through sound on Wednesday. And if that's the case, then we should be finalized because it's colored. The visual effects are in place. It's all set to go. Just the sound. And sound is one of the most important things about any of these things you do. Like, I believe in sound the way other people believe in Jesus. It really is the most important aspect of any production.
That's I'm glad to hear that, because you get so many of the even on YouTube, even in the movie theaters, you'll get points where the sound man didn't do his job, and you can either barely hear the person or the background music is too jarring for trying to hear the dialogue, or you know, it's just so,
takes her right out.
Yeah. But what did you do for your special effects? Because those were pretty darn good for a sketch like that. You know, when he like started to charge up his power and that sort of thing.
The person, my VFX supervisor, and indeed the only person doing VFX on Dark Spectre, his name is Art. And I'm going to butcher this name. And Art, if you ever hear this, I apologize. You told me I pronounced your name five times and I still can't get it. There's just far too many letters for me. But his name is Art Hakhervian. And he is a visual effects artist. He does commercial VFX, but what he really wants to do is this kind of stuff. And when I was looking for my VFX guy, I didn't have a lot of budget for it. I actually put out an ad on Craigslist, and people would respond, and they would come back with these ridiculous numbers for what I wanted to do, like $5,000 or $3,000. And this guy responded to me 2 weeks later, like weeks had gone by. He found my ad somehow, sent it to me, and he was like, yeah, I'm interested. Sent me a link to his website. I go to his website, and this dude knows images like you wouldn't believe. Like he has descriptions on his website about deinterlacing footage, fixing this problem, fixing that problem. He does these 3D models, these explode, like this telescope that goes into an exploded view. And I'm there watching this, my jaw like on my table going, and I almost don't write the guy back, because there's no way in hell that this guy is going to come on for what piddly ass little bit of money I have to give him and provide visual effects for Dark Spectre. But I figure, you know what? He's really good. I can be proud of being shot down by this guy. So it's like having the prom queen shoot you down. It's sort of like, I knew I wasn't going to do it, but I gave the effort anyway. Good for me.
Right.
I wrote him and he wrote back. He was like, yep, I'm on board. And I'm like, what?
Nice. And sounds like, go ahead.
And this time, like, Art is back for Dark Spectre 2. And this time around, though, we're consulting with him from the beginning, so that as we're going to plan these shots, we're going to shoot them in a way that makes it easier on poor Art, because Art had to rotoscope every single frame of visual effects. So he hand traced every last little detail. So when you see fire in my hands, he had to hand trace my hands and my, like, my arms to make that happen. Like, it took him months. So this time around, it's sort of like, okay, this is the shot where this is happening. How do we shoot that so that it doesn't make you want to cry or kill yourself? But nice. it's all Art. Anybody, if there's somebody out there who wants to be put in touch, like, with Art, please just email me. I'm more than happy to make introductions. The guy is awesome. He, if you look at the little news clip, he's the one who, you know, made the news clip, put it together. And there's another little promo for the Dark Specter 2 Kickstarter that he's working on right now, which is a really short one, but it should be fun. I don't want to spoil the surprise. Certainly not for me. I really want to be surprised when I see it. So, but yeah, Art's amazing. I can't praise him enough. Actually, all of my people have been unbelievably, like, good invested. The sound, like, I think we can all agree that I've got friggin' incredible sound, if I do say so myself, even though I did nothing for it. Somebody else did all that work.
No, it was very, very well done.
And that guy's name is Vince Tennant. He is, he manages one of the sound studios here, like a major sound studio. His other jobs are on TV shows and movies. And he just happens to be a guy who I met when I used to go to the Derby Doll matches, and I helped with a couple of the events, and he remembered me from that, and he's been doing my sound. It sometimes takes them a while because, once again, paid work comes in, big things come in, I fall on the back burner. But at the end of the day, like, I've got $10,000 worth of sound work in Dark Specter that, you know, he did as a passion project.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I don't believe in sound.
Nice.
There you go.
So like you said, you're hoping to do Dark Specter 2 and use that as a presentation piece to launch into a bigger thing. Like, and you said series. So are you looking for YouTube, or was this something you would like to see on, like, Comedy Central or Sci-Fi or
Sci-Fi, Netflix, FX, any, but not so much YouTube. I mean, if it fell down that way, it would still be a massive success from my point of view, but I would like to do it as an actual series. I would like to have, you know, 10 to 13 to whatever length to tell an actual story arc, and one where potentially there are investors and we can invest in, like, the VFX. 'Cause one of the things that I really want to explore in this world that I'm creating is, you don't tend to see superheroes and supervillains use their powers unless they're really using their powers. But if you had the ability to, you know, shoot flames out of your hand, you probably don't use the microwave that much. You probably, you know, right. There's a whole bunch of different things that you probably do throughout your day. If your food gets a little cold, you probably just, you know, a little bit of heat radiation and there you go, your food's warm. And so I wanted to, on top of exploring the big fights, where else do these powers come in? Are you okay? That sounded like somebody. I just heard like a little.
I'm fine. It's the way about it. Okay. No, apparently we're having sound problems.
Vince, where Ben's are you, puppy? Man? We need you, buddy.
That might be Ben's puppy. Hold on.
Yeah, my puppy. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, is that
where that was Pete's he had for dinner?
Is that what Ben's calling it now? His puppy.
Ooh.
Oh. Wait till you hear this puppy.
That almost sounded like a challenge.
Well, you know, if you
don't judge.
I'm just spitballing here, right? But if it gets made into a series, right, and you have this villain who's dealing with these having to find solutions to everyday problems. He needs like a team of guys, you know, kind of like, I'm thinking like the lone gunman type guys from the X-Files.
Shameless.
Like three smart guys.
Shameless. Dave.
What? And I think the three of us could fill that role. Yeah.
We are the lone gunmans.
Yeah. Ooh. So how much of an offer do you need to be able to be killed on this in a bear?
Mostly, it would be like painful and fire.
But, yeah, I mean, like in some comics, some of the comic book people that we've dealt with, to get more money other than their Kickstarter, you could pay like $500, and then they will give you a horrible, utterly horrible death in their comic book. So
yeah, I've got one of those tiers in my Kickstarter too. It's $400 and it's a walk-on role. There'll be events that happen throughout the fight between the Dark Spectre and the superhero that there will be, you know, people around, because the whole idea is it's on a city street, and if it's on a city street, you know, your city street can't have three people. But some of these things will have more. There'll be more action involved with than others. So, and actually, interestingly enough, two people have already bought walk-on roles, so that's cool. And bought is the wrong word, because this is a Kickstarter. It's, you're not selling things. It's a reward.
You're investing.
They'll be rewarded
for their investment.
For their investment.
Yes. I think what John's saying is he wants to pay the $400, but he wants you to kill them all.
Let's check with the director, see if we can work that in.
I want nothing left but a pile of radioactive dust. That's it.
And your glasses.
That'd be like, glasses fall on top with the like dust pile, just kind of like making it look almost like the dust pile's a bit of a nose, so that the...
See, there you go. Perfect.
Nice.
We'll have art on that right away.
We wouldn't be able to tell the difference.
But if, besides that, I mean, how are you monetizing this? I mean, you've got your Kickstarter, but are you going to release these? When are you going to go on YouTube? And if you do, given all the problems with YouTube and the where's the fair use thing going on, have you thought about that? Or
I have, like, with these things aren't really, the shorts that I'm making, they're really not going, they're not in and of themselves going to turn a profit as their own devices, just like Approvo, when I have it, isn't going to itself turn a profit. They're never going to recoup. They're more of what they more function as is part living resume, part proof of idea. Now, Approvo is just proving I'm funny. It's a one-shot thing. There's no story along to it. It's just a skit. It's cute. People will either like it or not, or I'll get a lot of hate mail, which I'm hoping for. But with the Dark Spectre, what I'm trying to do with it is, one, prove that, one, I'm trying to learn how to be a film producer in and of itself. So it's a test. Two, it's a proof of concept. When you look at Dark Spectre versus other things you look on YouTube, you kind of get the idea that at least I have a clue of what I'm doing. It looks, I'm not going to say it totally looks like it fell out of a like big budget movie, but it doesn't look that far away from it either. And right. Dark Spectre 2 is supposed to look very much like it fell out of a big budget movie. Now, granted, I'm not going to have a big budget to do it with. And even if my Kickstarter succeeds, it's still going to be a fairly small budget thing for something that on this size. But I can prove that I can put these things together. I can perform it. I can write it. I can produce it. I can get it all happening with porta potties. That's important. And so when I go in for the hopeful dreamed about meetings, and when I meet people and I try to present myself, that's where it pays off as a proof of concept. Now, of course, yeah, I'll put it on YouTube. Now, the reason right now Dark Spectre 1's not on YouTube, and you have to go to the Kickstarter page and there's a link with a password, is because I'm in the Pasadena Film Festival. And to be in a Pasadena Film Festival, I can't be on YouTube or Vimeo without it being password protected. So that'll probably end after next week, and then I've got to figure out how to re-release it. But even monetized, and I have I own all the rights to everything in it, including the music, or I have permissions and all that, so there's nothing that holds me back from having ads happen with it. But how YouTube seems to work is by a lot of repetition. So the people who seem to get big and popular on YouTube have 1,000 videos, mostly of them sitting there ranting about something. But you know, they're releasing 4 videos a week, and after a long period of time they build up this audience, like hit by hit by hit. So video 1 had 100 views, maybe. Video 2000 has like 500,000 views, and over the course of 3 years they built that. I'm not able to do that with Dark Spectre. It just takes far too much, you know, time, effort, money, and intent to be able to build something like that. I do have a sketch comedy group called Bizarre Love Triangle, which is my own little group, and we're going to be maneuvering from just to like go out on Saturday nights and play at the local improv place into doing a YouTube channel. And we're going to have small, easy to like churn out bits that we can do every week, and we're going to have more complex skits that we'll do. And the whole idea is, between 7 people, we can probably turn out a
better product than other groups of this sort, because the entire emphasis on it's going to be, we all need to learn about production, because we've got to be a mobile guerrilla production team that understands things like lighting and filming and sound. So that'll be my way of trying to grow something like that. But as far as Dark Spectre goes, Dark Spectre, maybe it'll find an audience and maybe it'll do that wonderful thing where it explodes and goes viral. I tend to think probably not, simply because of the nature of getting it out there and somebody noticing. It's like, my dream would be for James Gunn to see Dark Spectre and respond to it. Even if he just responds to it with like a, there you go, kid, that's the stuff. Like, just, you know, it would be nice. Is it likely to happen? Probably not. He's a little busy with, you know, life and being successful.
Just a little.
Just a little. But the good news is almost everybody who sees it enjoys it, and I'm sure that'll be the same with the second. So there's a very long-winded answer to how to monetize it. The answer is you don't, but you use it to try to further down the line monetize yourself in other ways.
Right. But actually, that brings up an interesting point. You said, you know, you're going through this process, you're learning how to film it and to light it and produce it and make it look good. I mean, and my question is, before you did the first Dark Spectre short, had you filmed anything before? Because, you know, it's very good quality. It looks like a, you know, a professional film.
Please keep talking.
No, because I'm bringing this up, you know, because there are millions of videos on YouTube and lots of people even doing similar things like you, doing a like you said, a parody of superhero before, or trying to do comedy things, but yet it looks like someone took a camcorder, shot it in their bedroom and put it up, and they go, look, couldn't this be a movie? Like, but so did you know any of these kinds of, you know, how to do lighting and any of that before you went into it?
Well, what I did is, a couple years ago, I briefly had a manager who wanted me to do one of two things, either stand up or a web series. And I've looked at the world of stand up and it looks kind of sad. Just from the outside, people don't look too happy in stand-up. So I figured, okay, I'll do a web series. And because I knew nothing, I decided I was going to do a 10-episode multi-camera sitcom for a web series, not knowing jack shit.
Okay.
And it was called Under the Doghouse, which, if you go to underthedoghouse.com, all 10 episodes are there. Now, I myself only know a little bit about filming and a little bit about lighting, because I'm more learning the production side. And the reality is, if you want to get good lighting, good camera work, you need to have the people to do that, because, you know, you can figure it out a little bit on your own. And that's fine. Like, I lit the Kickstarter promo video that, if you like, click on, it's me babbling at you for 2 minutes, interspersed with some bits of the Dark Spectre. But, you know, mm-hmm. I filmed that myself. I lit it myself. It doesn't look bad. It looks okay. Does it look professional? Probably not. But that's why I have a professional gaffer I can turn to. On Under the Doghouse, I met my pet DP. His name is Chris. And Chris became like a close friend. And Chris works. And in fact, he's the DP of Dark Spectre too. He was the DP of Dark Spectre. And he's also like kind of co-producing Dark Spectre too this time around. But he knows, like, I've never met a guy who is that passionate about being a cinematographer. Like, he will film stuff. He will study his stuff. Very devoted to it. I have him, and if he's not here filming something and I'm trying to film something for myself, I can just simply text him and ask him questions. So I've got people to turn to. And I think one of the things a lot of people don't realize is, if you're trying to start out to do stuff like this, one, you learn by failing. So it's okay for you to go out there, right, and skin your knee and, you know, fall on your ass. You just got to make sure you're taking the lessons that occur when that happens. And find people to ask help from. People will help you. People love to help you. They don't love to do things for you. And that's where I think a lot of people get confused. Because one of the things that happened to anybody who quote unquote produces is, invariably, a writer or an actor friend comes up to you and asks you to produce their writing or put them in something. And when you're a performer or a writer, you see the world that way. You're like, well, I don't see what the problem is with that. But what they're essentially saying to you is this: I want to do the fun stuff.
Right.
I want you to do every sucky bit of this that I don't have the mind set to like put myself forward towards. Just you do it for me. Don't go, hey, written a script. Can you help me make it? People don't respond to that because they go like, oh, you mean, and I have this idea and I'm thinking of doing it like this. Does that sound like it'll work? They will tell you, thinking, you know, that's an interesting idea. And the idea of shooting two cameras is great, except, you know, you're going to have low ceilings. And if you have low ceilings, you can't light for that because when they shoot three camera things, the lights are 12 feet above head and there's no ceiling. So you can, all the shadows are heading downward. You can shoot multiple cameras. In your apartment, you can't shoot multiple cameras without having weird shadow stuff happening. They'll spend a lot of time helping you with problems for you to solve. They don't want to do it for you.
Right.
So that's a...
No. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, so that's like a valuable lesson that a lot of people sometimes have difficulty getting.
Right. No, I mean, definitely. And it's... I guess, too, it's true, like, you know, the information's out there on how to make things look better, how to do things professionally, and you know, there, I'm, even if you're in Philadelphia or, you know, the middle of Indiana, there are people out there that are passionate about this, and you could probably work with them on these things, you know, you don't just have to grab a camcorder and tie a tail around your neck and say, I'm making a movie for YouTube. And it's going to be better than Batman v Superman.
Well, that's a given, oh, but, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, wait, yeah.
Where's the...
Is there a question in that? What was that?
So, anyway.
I would also say to people, sometimes, even though when you're doing low-budget things... Sometimes you have to try to identify the corners you can cut and the corners you can't. Very much like with sound. Not that I had the money for these, but I went out and I now have three lavs that are mine. So I have two Sennheiser lavs and one Asden. So I can get really decent sound with up to three people in discrete channels. Plus I've got a boom mic. And right now I only have a two-track recorder, but I'm getting myself the Zoom H6 so that I have the ability to record six discrete tracks. And what that means is sound is never a problem for me. So I invested a little bit to make sure that no matter what, I can always get good sound because it's, as we said before, it takes you out if it's bad. It's a fundamental building block. And the more you can ensure you've got good sound, the less problems, less big problems you have later. Because, you know, if you're sitting there and you're doing your own sound design and you don't know what you're doing and your sound is crap, you are not going to be able to fix it. You are not going to be able to clean it up, no matter how many YouTube tutorials you may happen to see on it, because it's a skill and it takes more than 5 minutes watching some guy playing with Adobe Audition for you to have the skill to clean up crappy location sound. So, you know, invest a little in yourself. If it is, you know, DSLRs are, the DSLRs you get, if you're doing it with a camcorder, you're doing it wrong, get yourself a DSLR. They're cheap enough. And I believe even like the T5i has the same chip that the 6DD does. So at least have a 6DD or 5i, you know, have that because that gets, there's a lot of good stuff that you can film on those cameras and they're not that expensive and you can do a lot with them. So granted, I might be talking to a 19-year-old who has $100 after working 4 weeks at Burger King, but you can borrow, you can rent, you can do these things, you know, shoot above what you think you can do. Learn, because if you shoot at the level that you're at, you never progress past it. So you really want to be shooting above and, you know, figure that out.
I knew I shouldn't have been using a $9 microphone from Best Buy on this. See, we have to invest in ourselves, Ben and Dave. We need better equipment. We need whisper boxes and real microphones. And
maybe you should stop spending all your money on bourbon.
So hey, that's important equipment too, Dave.
That's an investment in you.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Okay.
It's brandy, man.
Sorry. So as we're getting near the end here, something that, you know, one of those questions we always kind of like to ask people is, and I think this, you've talked about this in some ways or not, and not a little bit, but basic question is, you know, how do you measure success?
Respect. I would say that for, in regards to Dark Spectre, success came in the fact that when I first tried to do Dark Spectre, I approached a bunch of people going, hey, would you be part of it? And, yeah, well, you know, I'm busy. I'm this, I'm that. Dark Spectre 2? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm there. Oh, yeah. I want to be there. Absolutely. People are seeing before Dark Spectre 1, you know, I'm just a guy who wants to do something. Now I'm, you know, now I have an award-winning, well-showing short at numerous film festivals. It's really good. And now working on something that I did means something to people. So that's a measurement of success, the level of respect that I'm getting.
Cool. That's a very good answer. All right. So And I guess, you know, final question, unless John or Ben has something else to add.
Well, here, depends on your here's final question. To hoping. What's that?
I said it depends on his final question.
Well, here's to hoping that Zack Snyder sees your good work and picks you up.
Oh, God, I hope so. I would like to be Aqualad in the Justice League movie. That's what I would like to do. That would Dawn of awesome. Justice. Let me be Aqualad. That's what I want. Forget the Dark Spectre. Let me be Aqualad.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
he can only talk to small fishes, right? He can just communicate with goldfish and guppies.
Right.
They're hungry.
So where can all the goldfish and guppies find you online?
I'm glad you asked me that. First off, you can follow me on Twitter at Bruce Naxon. And God, I hope you guys post a link because I don't want to spell it and people aren't going to like get it if I do.
Yes, we will. We'll post the link.
Thank you. You can there's my personal website, which is www.brucenaxon.com. And of course, there's the website for the Dark Spectre, which is shockingly enough, www. Actually, you don't even need the W's. It's the modern age. It's just thedarkspectre.com. And also, to get to the Kickstarter, thedarkspectre.com/Kickstarter takes you right there. And, if I might do a little shameless plugging, people, please, you know, just come to it. Even if you only donate as little as a dollar, that makes a big difference because the whole idea with Kickstarters is if there's a lot of activity, you get picked as a staff pick and then good things happen. And so if it's a dollar, if it's $2, it doesn't really matter. If you just come and donate a little bit, that'll just make this so much less painful on my pocketbook. And I won't have to donate that kidney that I've scheduled. So please come donate.
See, you guys out there skipping one cup of Starbucks coffee could save his kidney.
My kidney.
There you go.
You can make an impact.
And we're trying to get Bruce to stop walking around with a handbook. I mean, with a pocketbook. So.
I think it's a good look for him.
I think.
Okay.
By the way, it's a MRSA. Thank you.
Okay. No, but definitely, I mean, if you're listening to the show, as we're always about supporting creative people and helping them push their projects forward. And Dark Spectre is funny. I mean, you guys will go check out. You can right now, as you're listening to this on Wednesday, you can only watch it by going to the Kickstarter and clicking on the link there. So go ahead and do that and watch it. And while you're there, just, you know, just drop a dollar on Bruce's lap.
For 100.
He'll do a little dance for you.
Yeah.
In costume.
We'll bust out the portable pole. We'll make it a party. In costume. Oh, God, yes. I love having a cape.
Well, there you go. On that note, that's perfect. As we say each and every week, boys and girls, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.